This episode of The Boundless Show is brought to you by Baker Books and the new book for Christian creatives, Called to Create. So whether you're an entrepreneur or you're just simply wired to create, Called to Create is going to show you how to embrace God's call and use your talents for the glory of God and the good of others. Learn more at calledtocreate.org. Boundless Show.
I went into my church and I talked with our community group pastor and I said, you know, I'm a single girl and I would really love to have meals with families. Are there people in the church who would want to have me over for dinner?
Well, that was Bree McCoy, author of Come and Eat, A Celebration of Love and Grace Around the Everyday Table. And she's going to be featured on our culture segment this week as we talk about the power of the table to create friendship and community. Later on in the show, we have our inbox. A listener has had a past that includes a porn addiction and dabbling in homosexuality, a number of different things, but he now wants to pursue a girl and is wondering, how do I put all this on the table and when do I do that? So fortunately, Jeff Johnston from Here at Focus is going to offer advice on that topic. Well, we are here for our round table and I have got Jake, Catherine, and Matt here. Hi, guys.
Hey.
What a day.
All right, Jake, we're going to talk a little bit. This is going to be a fun round table because Jake is actually in charge of social media, our social media platforms here at Focus on the Family.
Right.
Very, very interesting given this week's conversation and this week's challenge. Catherine is producer for Focus on the Family and for The Boundless Show. The latter being the most important of her job duties, obviously. And Matt works with Access.org, which is really engaged in equipping parents in worldview and apologetics
but he's
on
not
behalf
a
of their.
Right. He's not a I'm very unqualified to work there.
Hoping. No, I'm not my
sister.
He's just
a
kid. He's just a kid. So, from that perspective,
highly
he can speak.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's
helping
a
parent
that's
well
a,
on those
TV shows. No, I think it's highly questionable.
I'm highly unqualified for everything I do in the professional world, I think.
I feel the same way.
Well, no worries, because I'm sure that what we're talking about today, you are very qualified in. Because who isn't if you're under 40 at this point, people? We're going to talk about our phones, our smartphones, specifically social media, gaming, texting, and all the ridiculous notifications and ways that our phones are pulling us away from everyday life. Because did we all on some level have some kind of a fast from our phones for a week now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Some,
this is going to be interesting.
Okay. Some level.
Jake is going to have some kind of caveat because I have to do it for work.
It's
or whatever.
Literally what pays my bills and feeds
well,
my children.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, we're going to see if your personal life was able to handle it. Okay. I want to say, first of all, we got to go around and say, what did you give up? Because I didn't give up every aspect of my phone. I'm going to be honest. So I want to know, what did you guys actually give up or what did you attempt to give up? So, Jake?
Yeah, so I attempted to give up texting and personal social media use. So not tweeting or posting to my own Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat accounts or texting people. Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right, Catherine.
Mine was all social media, deleted all my apps, and most texting. I had to make some exceptions, but most of the time I ignored texts.
Okay, very good. Matt?
Yeah, and I think I'm on the same wavelength. I didn't have to make exceptions for texting, but I did a couple times.
Mm. Oh, man.
So we can talk about that.
Yeah.
We're going to determine if they were worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Lisa, you did social media.
Oh, it's worth it. It's a
okay,
good story.
Did you do any social
Lisa
media?
No social media, sorry.
Oh,
but that's easy for me. I don't do a lot of social media.
Oh, he did give it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But texting you did.
Yes.
Okay. And social media.
Okay.
And I gave up social media.
That was not a clean answer. Sorry.
Should we say that again? That was confusing.
I gave up social media, Facebook being my biggest offender by far, and I gave up games on my phone, which I use as a sedative in my life. I realized that's probably not the best. So that was very eye-opening for me. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the relative success of this. What did you expect to be hard? What did you think maybe would be easy? What ended up being harder than you thought? How did it play out compared to your expectations?
For me, I straight up forgot the first day. Like I told my wife the night before,
I told her,
I forgot to tell you about this, but I agreed to not text at all for the next week. And she's like, okay. And then...
Wait, so that was with your wife?
That was with my wife.
Okay.
Like, I was telling her this because I didn't want her to be texting me. Because we'll text throughout the day. She'll update me on this, ask me about that.
Right.
I'll say...
You should have told her, I just agreed to not text you.
Just you.
Yeah.
You're the only one I'm not texting. Everybody
totally.
Else is good.
Yeah.
And I was like, so if you text me and I don't text you back, that's why, you know, please don't be upset. That's why I'm not going to text you back. And literally by like 10 a.m. the day that the fast was starting, I texted her to be like, hey, what's up? How's it going? And I was like, ignore that. I'm not supposed to be texting you. So
just
I sent
kidding.
Two texts right away, right at the start of my fast. And it was hard. It was one of those things where I've thought about this off and on before, but my wife and I have a very like, we're not power texting each other throughout the day, but there's lots of little touch points
mm-hmm.
where it's like, hey, I just had a question about this for the house or for the kids, or, oh, hey, I just added this to the calendar. And it's both of us back and forth letting mm-hmm. each other know little things throughout the day. And so I found myself like constantly kind of, oh, I need to tell her about this. Oh, nope, got to put that down.
Mm-hmm. For those of you listening, he actually mimed
I
that.
Literally
so
just I just picked
know.
Up my phone to see if there was a notification.
And then he put it down.
There wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, does it listening. Make you wonder how people even lived before texting?
Yes.
Like, it just...
Absolutely.
Like, people...
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was small, you guys, okay, I'm not that old, but I remember when you broke down on the side of the road, you, like, had to find a payphone, okay, to go and call. And you just tried not to break down because you couldn't have easy access
right.
to people.
You were done.
We still try not to break down.
And know, did people make like... lists of what they were going to talk to people about when they saw them? Because how do you remember?
Oh, man. So, yeah, I ran into that.
Right.
With this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Because what?
Okay. So it's not a wife scenario, but like I started dating somebody recently. Recently, it's been like 4 months. But
let's just cancel the whole show. Let's talk about that.
Let's just go there right now.
Did your relationship survive?
It did. And interestingly so. Because like I have all these little things. I think, oh, you know, I wanted to ask her about this and tell her about that. And I just listened to this podcast and it was really cool. And this idea came from it, but I couldn't. Because all of this is happening like during work hours. I'm not going to step out and like call my girlfriend during work, probably. I don't know. Maybe I should. I don't know. I'm still new to this thing.
It feels different. Like sending a quick text on work time is like, well, that took me 10 seconds.
Right.
Right.
A phone call is a couple minutes. So that starts to feel like stealing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does. And what I found was I had this kind of mental list running of things I wanted to mention or ask her. And then I would just completely forget all of them by the time we actually did talk. A day later or something.
But. Yeah, I'm so used to now, whether it's via text with my wife or a couple of close friends or via Twitter, like if it's a thought that I want to journal, I knew this about myself, but I use Twitter as like a journal for all my weird thoughts. Or I'll write a note for, I'm building a stand-up comedy act, by the way.
Okay, Jake, what's your Twitter handle? I know everyone's wondering.
Okay,
if you want to follow my Twitter handle, it's @Jake_Roberson. But anyway.
Oh, it's not even like Jake Snake or
Jake
something. Like,
No, it's just straight up. But I found out, like, to your point, I have all these little thoughts throughout the day that I either want to send to somebody that I know or send out to the world or put in a note to remember later. And I was like, oh, I don't – those are my tools for doing that. It's text. It's a note on my phone app or in Google Docs, or it's texting somebody or putting it on Twitter.
Right.
And I couldn't do that, and I'd forget it all.
I have two funny stories. First, so I also was confused about the first day, and Matt actually started a day earlier than all of us.
Did I?
So
we did
I Facebook, messaged
days.
Matt, and I was like, "Hey, when are we starting our social media fest?" I get an email like 2 hours later from Matt, and he was
right
like,
now.
"I saw your message, but I can't respond because I'm at social media fest."
Which I was
like,
on social media for work at that point.
Right, right. Yeah. So that was awkward. And then the second day. I was at the airport because I did a lot of traveling during this week because of the holiday.
Yeah,
and
probably all did.
We have one mutual friend. I don't have Matt's number, but I know someone that knows him. And I almost called that person because I was like, we need to just give this up. But I can't tell Matt because I have no way to tell him. I was like, we need to stop. This is too hard.
It's like, how do you even communicate?
Yeah, that's what I didn't expect to be hard was the traveling aspect. Like when I got to the airport early in the morning, my mom wanted me to call her and I was like tired. And I just wanted to text her like, I'm here. But I had to like go hello and all that stuff. It's so annoying. I know.
Hello.
So exhausting.
But did you guys find that giving up social media was easier than you thought? I did.
Weirdly, that one for me was harder.
Really?
And I guess, but the weirdness is it's my full-time job. And so I've found as I've done social media full-time, I've used it a lot less personally. Like, I just get tired of it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was going to be easy. Mm. However, it was weird that, and it, part of it was it being around the holiday, was that as soon as I decided, I was like, it's not going to be that hard because I don't like using it personally anyways. But then all of a sudden, I'm in a Turkey Bowl game and everybody's Facebook, like it, there's a Facebook event group and everybody's messaging back and forth about what field we're going to be on. And I was like, I got to break my fast or else I'm not going to know where to go because they're talking about it in the group.
Right.
And then I had another friend that's like, hey, I'm starting a podcast. I need some feedback. I'm creating a Facebook group like so I can get feedback about my new podcast. And I'm like, I'm going to damage this relationship if I don't use Facebook
right.
to like help this guy who I agreed to help.
Well, I found that with texts, just relationships. Yeah. All my friends decided to text me on Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And I was
so
like,
of course, you called all of them back. And they said, oh, my word. You're my only friend that's called me today.
No. I texted them today. Hey, I'm texting again now. But none of them responded.
They started to totally ignore you for the last
week. You ignored their text.
But I tried to hang out with a friend, and she doesn't have cell service at her house, so she only get texts. So I had to call her house phone and talk to her parents and then talk to her. I know.
That's old school.
Crazy.
Wow. Can you put her on the line?
It wasn't Lisa. I have other friends other than Lisa Drake. I know it's hard to believe.
Well, I think for me, like one, I had two saving graces. One was that for the first 3 days of the fast, I was completely bedridden with vertigo. So I couldn't even like put my head up, let alone like look at my phone. Like I am not even kidding. Like I just, it helped me count the days. Secondly, I realized that once I actually turn notifications off, that was a big deal. Because for me, it's not even like that I have the bzz, 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 but I cannot stand having apps with notifications on them. So just that little red bubble would drive me nuts. Ooh. To see it have like, you know, 5, 7, 9. And then all of a sudden I'm just like, my life is spiraling into disorder. I cannot. I've got to check it. What if something's important? What if someone tagged me in something that's totally obscene? What if someone, you
does
know.
Does that happen a lot? So,
with some of my friends.
Does it?
Mostly with Catherine. But, you
yes,
know.
But since I was gone too, you knew
I knew you couldn't have done it. Right. So that helped me hugely. And I would say, you know, as far as like the game thing, I really only play kind of one game, Frozen Freefall. Okay.
I've never heard of that game.
It's kind of like a version of Candy
Frozen?
Crush. Yeah, it's from the movie Frozen.
Oh, sweet. That's
really?
Amazing.
It is. It's Candy
Crush. Are they skydiving?
For Frozen
and it's just
fans.
This awesome, like little, you know, mindless, but not totally mindless, but like little challenges and stuff. And it's when I get home at the end of the day, and there are very specific times where I find myself tempted to play this because at work all day I am on. I'm either doing a show, I'm in a meeting, I'm presenting something, I'm having people stop by my desk. Liza, did you get my email? What a,
it's
you know, whatever.
So I go this developer
and there's Catherine.
You didn't reply to my last 5 emails.
It's a different way to do conflict management. Like, I haven't seen this before.
So like sometimes I will just go and like sit in a chair in my house and be like, there's Olaf, and I'll just do a little game. And it's just like such a little, like, just chill time for me and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself like pulling out my phone to keep doing that and had to say no. And then I'm like,
no, Olaf, oh, leave me alone. Ever,
exactly.
Get behind me, Satan.
Did you delete the game?
I didn't delete the game. I just didn't open it.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just told myself I couldn't open it. So okay. It was very tempting and very hard. But it was so funny and how guilt-inducing when I'm like, how about instead of playing Frozen Freefall, I maybe like read scripture for 5 minutes or maybe I read a book or maybe I do something like normal and productive.
That's
so
what
it was
thought.
Funny. I just started self-questioning.
Yeah. One thing that I was interesting to me this whole week was my character and how many times I was tempted to go, but nobody's going to know if I log into Facebook right now while I'm at the in my layover. And I was like, I can't believe I just thought that. Like, mm-hmm. This is my word. I'm going to keep it. But I had so many moments of like, doesn't really matter. One of my friends told me that too. We were emailing because I wasn't texting them and they were like, who's going to know? And I was like, God?
Yeah. Like,
all of the loyal listeners
email.
To the Boundless Show.
Also, let's talk about email. Emails have subject lines. Weird. I'm glad texts don't have subject lines because I was like, I don't need a reason to email you. Like, hey, what's my subject line? So my subject line was, I'm glad texts don't have a subject line.
Yeah. See, and texting wasn't a big deal for me because I don't do too much. I'll do like touch point, like touching base or whatever and stuff. But I don't do a lot of like social texting and stuff. Usually it's just informational purposes and stuff. So I knew, I mean, I probably could have cut that out, but I knew that wasn't going to be a huge deal for me. But for me, the social media and the fact that every time I jump on social media, I am absolutely a victim of the whatever you call it, the suck or the surge or whatever.
Hole.
Yeah, the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I am all of a sudden it is 15, 20 minutes and I'm like, why am I reading this blog post and watching this video?
Yeah, because it's a spiral.
Here I am. Yeah, it's totally nuts. So,
well, because I think it's the mind-numbing aspect, like you said about the game.
Yeah.
It's when you get home from work and you don't want to think, what else do you do? Stare out the window? I mean,
yeah.
So I found myself thinking a lot more this week than I have.
Well, and it's interesting because you feel like there's this false sense of there's always something new out there. Someone just said something. Someone
and
just
you're always
commented
missing something, if you don't see it. Right.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my goodness, what am I missing? Or what happened that I... And I do get a lot of my news from social media too, which how that's questionable.
Right.
Like what? I realize that might be...
Quite questionable.
So I don't want to Jesus juke this conversation.
These are a lot
but...
of Russian posts I'm seeing these days.
Exactly.
But did you guys feel like you prayed more this week? I did.
I mean,
please say yes, because then I just sound like the
we prayed.
Man, I
want
to say no.
I've got the what is it? I've got the excuse of being a parent, so I'm basically praying 24/7. Lord, help me now. Like,
okay.
Someone's going to die if I lose my mind in this moment.
There
so
you
please.
But
save
I did,
me.
You know, walking again, like you know, I'm on the airplane or walking through the airport, and I see like a joke or something, and I'm like, I would text someone, but I can't, or I just have a thought, and so instead I would talk to God. I mean, you know, again, I hate to sound
oh,
like
God,
super
I guess you're the only one left here, so.
Like, God, do you think this is funny? Because my friend would.
No, but I think that's a good point. It's something I've actually talked with my wife about in regards to those micro touch points. I think when we hear that verse, pray without ceasing, we're like, that's unattainable. I can't go through every single minute, every single day praying. I have to cease at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more about like, are you having consistent touch points with God?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've found that in my relationship with my wife, like even when we were dating, it was something to have those like little micro touch points with her. We weren't talking without ceasing. There were obviously breaks, but at the same time, we were communicating without like in a kind of a seamless flow back and forth via text. And I think that's what our phones offer us at with other people. And that can get out of hand. That can start to prevent us from having those deeper times or from having those micro touch points with God. So I think to your point, I think a lot of times we use our devices as ways of like in moments where we might say something to God, we say it to somebody else.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think,
that's what
I feel like that's
doing.
What you were experiencing.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I have experienced that before. So it's not just you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, the other thing to Catherine's point is when you are so accessible, I mean, when like, for example, like there were a couple group texts that I received and then all of a sudden everyone's responding to it. And then if someone says something, you feel like you're going to be the jerk if you don't respond or people are going to hate me or they're going to mistake, you know, and then I'm just like I just wasted like a good chunk of my time making inane comments about stuff that really had I been able to just look this person in the eye and sit down and like say something substantive, it would have been so much more valuable. But it's again, it's that feeling of you know, you're back in junior high feeling like you have to be in the conversation or be part of it, or is that, I don't know, it was kind of nutty.
And what I thought was, if my friendship can't survive a week with me not responding to them, maybe it's not a real friendship. I mean,
Yeah, good point. Okay, so to that point, I want to know what changes tomorrow for everyone. Having done this experiment, what are you going to take with you that's going to go beyond this week? What were the biggest takeaways and learning points?
Ooh.
Mine was huge, honestly. I realized that going on Facebook was a habit for me. I wouldn't really say an addiction, but a habit, as in if I ever had a spare moment, I click the F and it comes up. And like, that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that so
totally
many times compulsively.
Yeah.
And now that habit is gone. Honestly, I think I broke it. I hope I did. I don't know. 7 days probably isn't realistically long enough. But I feel so much better. I mean, I feel more relaxed. I mean, it sounds silly, but I do. I mean, it's not a huge, like my life has changed now. But so I'm not going to bring that habit back.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to stay off. And I found this download on my computer that gets rid of your news feed. It's like a cookie on Google Chrome. And so you can like check messages, but your news feed doesn't come up for you to scroll through.
Mm-hmm.
That helps me because that's how I numb my mind.
Oh, sure. Just take away my livelihood. My whole livelihood is getting inside.
Mostly because I didn't want to see Jake's
posts,
honestly.
Does it take away the ads too?
Well, so actually to that point, here's something interesting. This week's feature article, for those of you who haven't read it yet, by Alan Briggs, is on how your smartphone actually may be killing your creativity and how all those little little like departures during the day of checking and doing this and doing that, you are no longer able to attribute mind space and energy to the stuff that really matters most and the stuff that requires those creative juices. And so I think that's a great example of just you're giving up one thing for the better, you know, for the greater
right.
good.
And as far as texting goes, I appreciate it more, honestly. I don't think I'm going to do it less. I texted my friend this morning. She was like, hey, you want to go on a hike? And I was like, I'm so glad I have texting because I probably wouldn't even be able to contact her if I didn't. So I don't know if my texting habits will change much, but
yeah.
What about you, Jake?
For me, it just continues to reaffirm something that has been on my heart for the last couple of months, and that is just actually for the last year, and that's just finding more opportunities to get my phone, not only have it turned off, not only not be texting or doing social media, but physically removing it from my presence. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because they've actually done a study recently that showed that the very presence of your phone in the same room as you contributes to distraction. Hmm. When you remove it physically, when it's anywhere near you, your mind, because of how we're trained by them, is knowing there could be notifications on it. It's mm-hmm. no longer, are there notifications? It's could there be? Mm-hmm. Because of the way these games and social media platforms have gamified our own brains mm-hmm. and pleasure centers. So for me, it's, I have to leave my phone in a drawer upstairs, completely removed from my physical presence or even location.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And do that more often.
Yeah.
So that I can be present in those moments.
Yep. Wow. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Just like sidebar, I've been plugging my phone in the kitchen, just like downstairs from my bedroom every night at like 9 o'clock-ish for the past couple months. And I had this withdrawal period where I would go to sleep and like want to like thumb through something or wake up and kind of want it too. But it's been real nice having it in my room too.
Yeah, and guys, just practically speaking, that's a great way to remove temptation out of your room.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Like,
totally.
Go talk to Mike Donaghy about his decision. I know you can't talk to Mike Donaghy, but he's got stuff out there like on his blog about why he went back to an actual alarm clock as a way of helping him stay pure.
Is he an author? Mm-hmm. I've never
Sorry, Mike Donaghy, for those that don't know, is the lead singer for 10th Avenue North.
Okay.
Great guy.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of friends who have done that too, actually.
Yeah,
I like
it's
that.
Huge. It's
I
huge.
Think for me, my biggest takeaway is to no longer let my phone cannibalize my day. So when I do social media, it's going to be in a block of time and then it is done for a certain, just like people say, save your emails up and check your email 3 times a day or whatever and just give it a good, or the game. You know, I'm going to sit down, do a game. I'm not going to be just standing in line somewhere and, oh, I guess I'll just check Facebook. Because again, that's what I'm so prone to do. For me, I knew that it was when I was looking at my phone during, true confessions, my quiet time that I was like, Jesus, take the wheel. This is
hashtag
ridiculous. Hashtag headed to south. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But you guys, thank you so much. This was good. This was a good experiment. And Catherine, I think you were one of the ones that kind of spearheaded us doing this. So we made it happen.
Thanks,
so.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, thanks. I know it wasn't easy. So
yeah, I got a couple of my friends to do it, too. So
awesome.
My mom and dad did
nice.
It.
Very
so
good.
We're starting
influencing
a trend.
My mom doesn't do social media, so that was good. Folks, here we are for our culture segment, and I have got Bree McCoy on the phone here. Hey, Bree.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. This is a new friend to the Boundless Show, but some of you may know her because she is quite the blogstress, running the blogging program at Compassion International, and also having her own blog where she talks a lot about life and food. It's oursavorylife.com. That's S-A-V-O-R-Y for those of you who can't spell. Okay, you know I talk to you sometimes. Oursavorylife.com. And so we're going to talk because she actually authored a book called Come and Eat, a celebration of love and grace around the everyday table. And so she's kind of a new friend here. But also, I understand you're going to be talking to our friends at Focus on the Family as well, coming up in the near future. So that'll be fun. But just so you know, we talked to you first. So it's okay.
I love it. I won't forget.
Don't forget. Okay, so this is, now you're not, are you actually cooking anything while you're doing this interview?
No, I actually am not, but I do have my apron on because I am ready to go to the kitchen and cook dinner in a little bit.
Oh my word, that's hilarious. Okay, so you actually wear an apron while you cook?
Yes. A cute apron. It makes me feel a little put together.
Okay. Well, that's good, given that in the book you talked about, you know, barely getting it together with your yoga pants, and you thought you were going to be cooking in heels, but maybe that didn't quite work the way you'd hoped.
Never has that happened.
Okay. Well, you actually, and really the reason for the whole book, is you see the table as a ministry opportunity. And not only is it reflected throughout Scripture in the way that Jesus ate with everyone from his disciples to sinners to people he knew, people he didn't know at all, you know, or had been introduced to. And you're saying that we as believers can model that in our own lives to really get to know people and fold people into community, do real life with people. And all of this is around a simple thing called food. That's what you're saying, right?
Absolutely.
Well, let's go ahead. I want to actually ask you a few questions specifically about this, because I think, you know, here we are. You're talking to a bunch of young adults. Some are, I'm sure, awesome, rockin' cooks. The rest of it, and those three people are listening, and then everyone else is ordering pizza, making frozen dinners, trying to glom onto someone who can cook so they can get invited to their home, or going back to their parents' house whenever they get the chance so they can eat something real. So you need to help make this attainable for us, because I love the way you open your story by first of all sharing this story of cooking an onion casserole, which I don't even know, even people that don't know a lot about food, like I would never open up a cookbook and be like, you know, the one thing I really want to attempt right now is this onion casserole. Like, who even does that, and where did that come from?
Oh, goodness, I do that. I do that. This is how basic. I really wanted to share that story in my book because that really was how basic of a cook, I guess. I couldn't have even called myself a cook at the time. But I didn't know. I just thought, this recipe has all the ingredients I have in my pantry, which is literally just a bag of onions and some cream in the refrigerator. And so I really wrote this book coming from a place of, I had no idea what I was doing in the kitchen. I never wanted anything to do with the kitchen, and cooking was never appealing to me. And so it really didn't come to a place where I started to step into the kitchen until I got married at 26, and my husband and I were surrounded by single guys who were in the military. My husband's in the military, and just a lot of young friends who needed a place to eat a home-cooked meal, and I wanted to eat a home-cooked meal, and we were very far away from our family, and so I did start to step into the kitchen and cook, and I burned so many things in those first few years, but I just kept coming to the kitchen and going to the table, and I think that what encouraged me to keep showing up, even though I was burning things and our house was never perfect and I always looked, you know, a mess, is because I did see the power of what Jesus did when he was here, and he kept going to tables and showing up at meals.
Yeah. So with this group of guys who were in the military, a lot of them single, your husband, you kind of like, you know, kind of cook but don't cook, whatever. Paint for us a picture of what that looked like. What was the conversation like? What was unexpected about the experience where you really were, like you said, it couldn't be about the food because you were no Julia Child, but it became about something bigger. How did that happen?
Yes, so we did start having some of these guys over, and to be honest, I was reluctant. My husband was the one that was like, I invited these guys over tonight, and I was so
nervous. That's because he's not cooking. What does he care?
I just felt like... No, they're going to eat what I cook. They're going to hate this. This is going to be awful. They're going to run far away from our homes. But what really started to change for me is that first they kept showing up, which was very shocking to me, not being a great cook. And also what I noticed happening around the table is it just felt like this deep, big breath of fresh air for them and a place of comfort and rest. It didn't really matter what food I was showing up at the table with. What really mattered was that Jeremy and I were showing up and we were making space for them in our home and we were asking them questions about how life is. We often ask, you know, how can we pray for you and what's hard right now? What's hard about being away from family? And so as we started to journey into that, I noticed, oh my gosh, the food is a very, very little consequence. And it's about making space for people in your life.
Yeah. So how can you paint a picture for how this could look for, say, the single adult who is working full time, who maybe is in I think it's such a challenge to even get to know our neighbors or people within our communities or, you know, I mean, sometimes even the people at church, it's like, you know, oh, you pass them in the hall, whatever. What does the inviting actually look like? Like, how do you kind of start this process and make it attainable in a busy life where you're not just having the luxury of sitting home all day poring over recipe books and, you know, doing 12-hour roasts and stuff?
Yeah. Well, when I was single, I took two approaches to this. And the first was I really was desperate for community and to be around people at the end of the day, even though I, you know, lived on my own and I was not going to be the one that cooked a meal for just me. And so I went into my church and I talked with our community group pastor and I said, you know, I'm a single girl and I would really love to have meals with families. Are there people in the church who would want to have me over for dinner? I really did that. And amazingly, they actually did put a call out, you know, and all of these single people, we found out it wasn't just me, but there were a lot of single people in our community who were looking for that community at the end of the day. And then there were these families who were like, hey, we would love to have some people over to our home. We can't necessarily be going over to your house, but we can bring you into our home if you'll come into the chaos with us. So that was one kind of approach I took was, you know what, I know all these amazing women and families, and I would love to learn from them and learn about how they're raising their kids and learn about how to cook. And so why don't I just invite myself to their house? And I started at my church. And it turned out that they didn't know that I wanted to be in their homes, and I didn't know that they wanted me in their homes. So we allowed the church to facilitate that, and that was really fun. And then as for inviting into my own home, I had an amazing roommate at the time, and we both worked at Compassion. I still do. And we started our own little supper club. And so we sent out emails to people. We said, add to the list if you want to. We're going to cook dinner every Thursday night. And if you all, whoever wants to show up, show up. It's always going to be there. We will always be cooking a meal on Thursday night. And so that was another area where we were able to have people enter our homes and just took that step that felt kind of vulnerable, but just said, our home is opened every Thursday. Please come.
Yeah, that's good. You know, that's so funny because I kind of started doing that myself, but almost accidentally. And really, it was I have a roommate and we host a Bible study Thursday nights. And so we kind of said, anyone who's just coming from work or wants to come for dinner beforehand, you know, join us. We'll be cooking something anyway. And so it's really become a fun time of gathering and being able to catch up, you know, prior to Bible study when we kind of delve into the study itself. And so it's kind of grown into this little thing that's a little more than we probably even expected it to be. So
I love that.
Like you said, you know, you think it's going to start out as something else, but then because of the people who are present and the fact that people do show up, and some of them just because they need to, because otherwise they won't eat. And some people, because they're like, yeah, I don't want to go eat by myself. So I'm going to join you guys. So
yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I think that God is so faithful with our small little offerings, and he can take just our small little invite and turn it into something we never could have imagined. Yeah. I love that.
Well, let's talk about, because you have a story in the book about you were at a table in Thailand and actually tried, you know, sometimes dinners can turn into a little bit more than just casual chatter. And you actually tried to do something big in the way of ministry, something you felt like and almost felt guilty of after the fact. Talk us through that story and what God taught you through interacting with Lynn.
Oh, yes. So I was in Thailand working with a ministry to help women out of prostitution. So every night we actually went to the red light district of Thailand, and we would sit at these bars and or nightclubs. And the plan of this ministry was you would ask to buy one of the women. So you would pay the price so that the woman would be released for the night, and then we would take them out for a meal. And over time, we invited them to the English classes that we taught, and there they could learn about Jesus, and we also would teach them a different skill so that they could make money in a different way. And it was an amazing nonprofit, and so many women were rescued in that way, but it was a very long-suffering approach. It wasn't just like you could come in one night and completely eradicate prostitution. But my first night, I thought I would do that because I just, to me, it seems so simple. Like, what? Why are these women here? We're going to tell them they don't have to be there, and we're going to take them away, and we're going to rescue them, and we're just going to shut down the whole prostitution ring in Thailand. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case. In fact, on one of the nights that I showed up, I was talking with the women behind the bar, and I had noticed that they were shuffling around, interestingly, and it happened to be that they were hiding one of the young Thai women, and she was definitely in her teens, I think 16, and it was her first night, and she had just been captured from her home in northern Thailand, and so the women were trying to hide her so that she would not be purchased. And when they found out what we were doing, they immediately, all of these women were like, oh my gosh, don't take me, please take her. Like, she needs to go. This is her first night here. And so I immediately, like, pulled out the money to take Lynn, was her name, was her, the American name that they told us. I paid the money to get her out. And I was so passionate about it, as you can imagine, I immediately was like, we've got to get her out now. And the pimp arrived, and he was very unhappy. He knew about this nonprofit, and he did not want any of his women to come with us. He especially did not want Lynn to come with us because it was her first night, so she was going to make him a lot of money. And so the leader of the group, she had seen this so many times, and it was time for us to go. We only would stay at each place for about an hour. So they literally, my group basically had to rip me away from the counter because I just went hysterical, crying and trying to bargain with the pimp and trying to give him more money. And at the end, I lost. Like, that wasn't going to happen. They had to pull me away, and we drove away, and it really broke me in a lot of ways. I didn't talk about that story for a long time. I just felt like I had failed that girl, but I also felt like I had let the evil of the world get to me in a really bad way.
Yeah.
And so I feel like what Jesus had eventually revealed to me from that is I needed to be at that table. There was a reason I was there, even though the outcome wasn't what I wanted it to be. And I think that Jesus calls us to tables of brokenness, and sometimes it's hard and it's uncomfortable, and you don't always leave a table where there's brokenness with, you know, a nice little bow tied around it, like, okay, we solved the problem, or the person's not hurting anymore or broken anymore. That's very rarely the case, but I think when we look at Jesus' life, we see that he showed up to tables of brokenness anyway, and I think he can use us at tables of brokenness anyway, even if we never see the outcome of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's so easy to go in, you know, because, you know, something like this, we can get all pumped up and be like, okay, I'm going to go online and buy a huge farm table, and I'm going to be like awesome. And, you know, I'm going to bring all these broken people into my home, and they're going to get fixed. And, you know, I think we could have these expectations of what this should look like. And you're just saying we have to provide the space, and it's God that's ultimately going to do the work in people's hearts and in our lives. Give us an idea, though, Bree, of what, like, for the person that's like, you know, some of us are just automatically overthinking this. Like, what if I'm the one that, you know, says too much at the table, or what if someone else is, and then we've got this awkward conversation? People, you know, you have the oversharer, you have the person who just, you know, monopolizes, you have the person that doesn't say anything but just glares at everyone. How do you manage the mass of humanity around a table? Do you ever feel nervous about that? Like, you have to keep the conversation going or make something else happen or steer it in a different direction?
Oh, yes. I especially coming from a background of, you know, I was very much a perfectionist. And so I definitely have had times where I'm like, we cannot ask this person this question. It is going to open all kinds of cans of worms. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with it. We need to have our happy-go-lucky conversation. But really, I think God has worked on my heart so much to show me that it is up to Him anyway. And we need to be doing life with people, absolutely. And so if we aren't willing to journey with someone even and be willing to get a little dirty, like, okay, this conversation is going to get a little awkward, or it's going to get a little embarrassing maybe, or maybe even a little annoying, I just always have to come to a place of, I trust the work that God is going to do at the table, and it's probably definitely not going to look the way I thought it was going to look, but I'm just going to trust it and be very, very in sync with the Holy Spirit. I try very much to, like, be prompted by the Holy Spirit, and a lot of times that does look like, you know, oh my gosh, I'm feeling prompted to ask this question that I definitely don't want to ask, yeah, or to say this thing that I don't want to say. And so I think if we just go into the table, at least what I have to do is drop all my expectations and go to the table and just say, God, I'm here, I'm showing up, and I am so willing to do what you need me to do.
Yeah.
Then all of that other stuff will fade to the background.
Okay. So super obvious question. Tell us where to find people. What are some of the spheres of life that we should be considering when we think of people to invite to the table?
Yes. Okay, so I always start with my neighbors. And I also, my husband and I have now gone to our church, and we've said we love having people over for dinner. Can we start a little supper club through the church? So if you're like, I don't even know where to start, and you have a great home church, that's a really great place to start. Neighborhoods, we go to, there's a puppy park that we go to. Like, wherever you are consistently, we just kind of looked, where does God have us consistently? We're obviously consistently at our home. We're at this park all the time. You know, we're at work. And so we kind of are like, God has placed us here consistently for a reason. And if we just will look up from what we're doing and start sending out that invite and not be scared, which I know sometimes I am. And I have had my share of, no, I do not want to come to your house and have dinner. Mm-hmm. I've had that, and I've just had to be like, okay, well, thanks.
Yeah.
But God will still use your invite.
Yeah, that's great. And I like, too, how in the book, and again, the book is called Come and Eat, you actually give recipe ideas. So, and not that people have to go all like home cooking all the time, but there is something about putting that effort into it and making a home cooked meal. I did see, just so you know, I saw your recipe for pot roast, and I'm going to try it. I've never seen one with pepperoncinis. If it does not work for me, though, you are going to hear from me, because I have not yet made a good roast, Bree. And so this one, either this one's going to have to be it, or you're going to hear from me and I'm going to be blaming you. So,
oh my gosh, I'm so excited for you to try it. And I hope it turns out good.
Oh, you'll know if it doesn't. Trust
or
me.
I'll know.
You know, you'll know. Although maybe my first line of attack will be to blame my slow cooker, because I'm wondering if that's on the fritz. I don't know. I just feel like I have had limited success. I can't yet venture into the world of the Dutch oven. I know you talk about that in the book. Can't even go there just yet. So, okay. So you showed us.
Well, let me know.
You showed us where to find people and kind of conversations to have, expectations to have. Tell us, just as we finish up here, about your 21-day adventure at the table. What does that look like for single young adults who want to give it a try?
Oh, yes. So I really wanted to make people coming to the table, especially people coming to the table maybe their first time of actually thinking about doing this, super, super easy. I wanted to give them everything they absolutely needed. So the 21-day adventure has 21 recipes, and then for each of the 21 days, it has a prayer for the table, and then it has 3 to 5 questions for the table. So especially for people who are new to this, you can start so small, which is what Jeremy and I did. I mean, it can be as much as like, you know what, I'm going to invite just my neighbor or my best friend or whoever it is to the table, and you have the recipe. You even have questions if, you know, you think, I don't even know what question to ask this person. There are questions, and I actually have had a few people reach out to me and say, I've never done this thing, and it's a group of my single friends, that they've never consistently come to the table because they felt like, I'm single, I'm not going to make a meal for myself consistently or come to the table consistently. But they are using the 21-day adventure at the table to start a supper club. So they just sent out an email or a Facebook post that said, hey, I'm starting this supper club. Will you all join? And so they're starting it, and they're doing it, and you have 21 days all ready for you to go.
All right. Well, it's good to know. Folks, the book is Come and Eat, A Celebration of Love and Grace Around the Everyday Table. We've been talking to Bree McCoy. So this adventure, the recipes you need, the stories behind it, what this looks like, you can find in the stories that Bree has told within the book. So just start inviting people. I mean, you've got, I don't even care if you're in a studio apartment. You've got one seat in the bathroom on the toilet. You can have people perched on the tub. You can have people hang out in the hall. Hey, you'll find people if you're out in the hall, yeah. You know, just open your door and tell them to come in, whatever. This is doable regardless of your living space and your place in life. Everyone's got to eat. So, Bree, thank you so much for hanging with us and giving us some great ideas. And again, showing your own hilarities and failures in the process, because I think it encourages all of us who are a little nervous about trying this. But yeah, we'll have folks weigh in on the blog and let us know how this experiment's going for them and what it looks like and what their own fears and successes are around it. So thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much. It was so fun. Thank you.
On that cross of Calvary, every burden's been defeated, every wretched heart deep. You drown our sin in seas of crimson, every wretched heart redeemed. You drown our sin in seas.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Death is beaten, Christ is risen from.
Well, hey, everyone, as we close out this week's show, I get to welcome Jeff Johnston from here on our Focus on the Family staff. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, and you are one of our analysts, specifically on gender and sexuality, I believe, right?
Yes, marriage, homosexuality, and gender.
Okay. So he has a lot of expertise, folks, which is great because we have a question from one of you. I'm going to read it and then let Jeff just, give it an answer. Okay, our listener says, I'm a former porn addict. Having been exposed to porn and masturbation at the age of 9, I fought them for almost 20 years. I've abstained from masturbation for 2 years now and am in counseling with my porn addiction. I'm not completely free yet, but the Lord has brought me a long way. As a teen, I had some homosexual experiences. I've been thinking about courtship, marriage, and parenting lately. I've never had a girlfriend before because I didn't want to hurt her and drag her into the struggle, but I'm interested in a woman whose father is a pastor. I'm afraid she will judge and reject me. Do you have any advice for me?
Well, first of all, let me say that I am really glad that you are getting help and support and that you are moving towards more and more victories in these areas. There's a lot to think about in your question, so let me just hit on a couple of key points. First of all, it's really, really important that you have a group of men in your life who know you, who are walking through life with you, and who speak truth to you. Having a counselor is good, and that's a great thing, but you need guys who are next to you and who understand what you're going through and who are walking with you through this struggle. And this group should include people who are ahead of you in the process, so role models and mentors and coaches. And it should also include guys who walk along beside you where it's more of a mutual relationship. And then my question would be, what do these guys think about your pursuit of a relationship? Do they believe that you're healthy enough, that you've moved ahead enough to be in a solid place where you can begin to think about dating and then marriage? And that would be the question I would be asking them. Another related question that you seem to be asking is this. When do you talk to this young woman about your struggles with pornography and some of the issues with homosexuality in your past? And I have three thoughts here. First of all, don't dump this on her first thing. And I know that just from my own experience. I was about 6 months into my healing process of leaving homosexuality and dealing with pornography, and I went on a date with a girl, and I told her everything on the first date. And she was very smart, and she ran as fast as she could. I was not so smart and went on a date with another girl where, again, first date, told her everything that was going on, and she was smart and ran away. And that's not a good way to handle this. So you don't want to dump everything at once on a person. Fortunately, I learned to wait, and about 5 years later, I was in a relationship, and about 6 months into it, I began to talk to the woman who was to become my wife about some of the issues from my past. And I say all that not to dump everything on the first date, because it takes time to know if another person is safe enough to talk to. It's not just about you, it's also about them. Are they trustworthy? Are they far enough along in their Christian walk to be able to handle what you're talking about? And you can't know that on a first date. So you want to make sure that they have good characteristics and good character qualities to be able to deal with this stuff. And then after a while, like I said, after you've waited a while and you believe she's trustworthy, you will need to tell her some things about your past. You don't need to go into every detail and you don't need to tell her everything, but you are going to have to tell her some things about your past to open up to her. And again, for people who have struggled with addictions and sexuality, it's difficult to trust people. That's one of our basic issues. But you have to make a choice to trust the other person. And again, having guys who walk beside you in this process and tell you that you're ready to do all this is going to be really important. There are a couple of really good resources out there that I think would be very helpful for you or for anyone else in this situation. The first is called Changes That Heal by Dr. Henry Cloud. And it lays out the growth process for healing for anybody, not just sexuality, but for any issue. And that's Changes That Heal by Dr. Henry Cloud. And then the second resource is a book called Safe People. And again, it's by Dr. Cloud and also by Dr. John Townsend. And it talks about what are the characteristics and the qualities that make people safe to share your life with and safe to share things with. And you can find both Changes That Heal and Safe People in the Focus on the Family bookstore.
Great. Which is just go to focusonthefamily.com and you can click right on our store. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thanks, Lisa.
All right, folks. Remember, this week's show is sponsored by the book Called to Create by Jordan Rayner. You can pick up a copy of that wherever books are sold. So check it out. Folks, that's it for this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the Family.